The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Good evening. Welcome, welcome. So if we come to a Dharma center and we see this guy here, the Buddha, these statues, he's usually depicted as sitting by himself with his eyes closed. And we just finished doing a Dharma talk. We're about to do a Dharma talk. Where we sat, we're in community, but we sat with our eyes closed, not talking to one another. So there's a way in which you might think like, oh, this whole meditation thing, this whole Buddhist practice thing is all about just being yourself and getting that willpower and striving and making things happen. And to be sure, there's some element of that, of some effort, but let's be honest, if practice was just about sitting quietly with our eyes closed, any of us who did nap time when we were in kindergarten probably would already be awakened, right? So, of course, there's a lot more to Buddhist practice. And from the very beginning, the Buddha recognized the importance of other people, the community. So even though we're sitting by ourselves and not talking and don't have our eyes open and aren't engaging, this practice really is about being in the world in such a way that we're not causing harm to others, not causing harm to ourselves, and that we can bring more goodness into the world. There's so many different ways we can interpret that word, goodness. So we could say that classically, in the early Buddhist teachings, many of you will be familiar with this idea that we take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. This is a formal ceremony that it used to be like every other year at IMC we would do this, where there would be classes that would be offered and then there'd be a formal ceremony. I think the last time, it's been a number of years since it was done, I think the last time it was done on Zoom and in person and we mailed out things to people as part of the ritual. But for those of you who sit residential retreats, we do a short version of this little 20 ceremony at the beginning of the retreat. I'm not going to go too much into this, but this idea of taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is just orienting our life towards, okay, what is it that provides safety? What is it that provides well-being? And there's lots of different ways we can interpret this. The Buddha stands for our potential. He was a human just like we are. And he became awakened just like we can. So taking refuge in our potential. The Dharma is, again, this can be interpreted many different ways. One is the teachings that the Buddha left behind. I'm giving a Dharma talk. In theory, I'm inspired, and I actually am very much inspired by the teachings that the Buddha gave, and I'll even throw in some quotes here from the suttas. And then the last one is Sangha, taking refuge in Sangha, taking refuge in community, recognizing that the role that other people have in our practice. Sangha and community, we can understand in, again, lots of different ways. Some of it could just be the Monday night at IMC community. Maybe you don't necessarily talk to one another a lot here, but it would be different if I was here and you were here, or if you were here by yourself and I wasn't even here and Jim wasn't here, or, you know, if you were just here by yourself, it'd be so different, right? And during the pandemic, I did come here and sit in this room all by myself and talk to a camera all by myself. It was different. I like it when you guys are here. I like it when we're practicing together. Maybe that's part of the reason why I say it's nice to see you guys, to be with you all and to practice together. I spent many months just me and this camera. So this idea that practicing in community is part of what supports our practice. And as I said, classically, we take refuge. It's in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. But not only that, many of you will be familiar with this, the Eightfold Path, this, these, not surprisingly, there's eight elements to it that lead towards awakening. And these eight elements can be abbreviated as Sila, Samadhi, Panya. No need to remember these words. But the first one is Sila. And we can interpret this as ethical behavior, not causing harm to others or to ourselves. So the Buddha put this at the beginning of the path. When Buddhism came to the West, that part kind of didn't get put at the beginning so much. Instead, meditation practice got put at the beginning, and it's what we often emphasize and teach about. Many of you will know Gil Fronsdal, the founder of this center here, is starting a class, The Equivalence of Ethics and Enlightenment. I think it starts in a few weeks. I taught this with Gil here at IMC, I can't remember, once or twice, and Gil and I taught it together, a version of it, at the university a couple of times. It's such a rich topic. It's so fascinating and fun and interesting, and all this whole idea of ethics, which normally if you hear this word ethics, like, ugh. Doesn't sound interesting, but it turns out to be really, like, how can we show up in the world not causing harm? And what were the teachings of the Buddha? And how can we interpret them in modern times and make them relevant and a support for our practice? So, small little plug if you're interested. Equivalence of Ethics and Enlightenment. But this is, again, this is the Buddha pointing to the importance of how we treat one another, how we are in the world, right? Ethics doesn't really make so much sense if you're only concerned about yourself. He put this at the beginning of the practice because it's how can we be in community? And some versions of the practice, or this, the training, I should say, maybe towards awakening, like add generosity at the beginning of practice too. So even before meditation, this idea of how are we showing up in the world and how are we treating other people? There's this way generosity, if it's done in a way that is supportive of practice, creates a relationship between people. It's a way of demonstrating care and this recognition of others and this way of allowing ourselves to feel inspired and to have some actions that come out of this inspiration and appreciation. So in some of these ways, we could say classically, traditionally, this being with community has always been at the forefront of practice. And the version that we inherited here in the West, it doesn't always show up there, but it's definitely an integral part of practice. But maybe we could say, not only like putting what classically aside, that I have a story that, you know, I reflect on this often. It's amazing when I think about this. I was a new practitioner. I was, many of you know, I'm trained as a scientist, and I was working in corporate America, and it's, you know, it's a different type of culture than it is here, let's just say that. And I wanted to go to a meditation center, and I had been to some Dharma talks, but later my friend called me a Dharma bolter, that I would be somebody as soon as the Dharma talk was finished, pew, I was out the door. I would bolt. It's true. I would do this. I didn't talk to anybody or anything. I just showed up and left. But I thought I would like stretch myself a little bit on one of these days when there was some extended sit-walk type of thing. And then there would be lunch. And on this particular event, it was a brown bag lunch. We would bring our lunch. But we were no longer in silence, so we would talk. And I didn't know anybody. And it felt kind of awkward and a little bit shy and introverted. And just ended up having this lovely conversation with these people over lunch. It was fun and interesting. And at the end, as we were packing up to go, this woman turned to me and remind me again, what is your name? But she said it in this way, like, it was nice talking with you. And what is your name? And just that small little gesture just made me feel like, oh, maybe I could belong to a place like this. Maybe I could come back. You know, this was a stretch for me to talk to people that were meditators. And this woman and I ended up becoming good friends, and I met other people and we became good friends. And soon, you know, we would like meet for coffee at Pete's Coffee sometimes, you know, after Dharma talks, and talk about what we had heard and what was going on. And then some of people, they said, oh, we're going to set up and go to a residential retreat. I'm like, I don't really want to go on a residential retreat. But there was a certain amount of peer pressure. I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. I had been on one already, and it was really hard for me. But I ended up going on another retreat, and, you know, fast forward maybe a couple decades, and here I am, a Dharma teacher. But what an impact it had, just this woman saying, oh, it was nice talking with you, and what was your name again? Just this small thing, just this small connection made it easier to come back, made me be more willing to, like, okay, maybe to come to more meditation events and connect with other people in a way that just made it so much easier than if I were leaving the talks and kind of like scratching my head sometimes, like, I'm not sure what that was about. Or it had such a big impact on me. And I want to believe that the Buddha recognized, like, what a difference it makes if we have a connection with people. Not just Dharma practice, not just meditation, anything we do. There's a reason why there's all these meetup groups, and maybe social media has enabled some groups to get together, and, you know, that have similar interests or something like this. So there's this way that maybe to talk specifically about how community can support our practice is that there's this way in which specifically I'll talk about here, you know, at meditation centers, is they support kind of wholesome qualities. Here, one part of the reason that happened in my early years when I was starting to meet people that were other meditators, I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And it's only many years later I can look back and see, why is it what that I kept coming back and that it felt so important for me? And one was, I felt safe in a way that I hadn't before. And part of it was this commitment to not gossiping. There's something that just feels good when people are not sitting around saying mean things about other people who aren't there. Just this warm-heartedness. It just felt like, oh, okay, I could relax. Like, these people aren't going to be talking about me as soon as I leave the room or something like this. This is a subtle thing, but it ended up having a big impact on me. So there's a way when we're with other people that are practicing in a wholesome way as best that they can, it really supports us to practice or to show up in a wholesome way as best as we can. Not hearing other people gossip helps us to not feel like, okay, we want to gossip. Or to, you know, tell lies or things that aren't true or something like this. or to be divisive in our language or something like this. Or maybe we see other people speaking kindly about others. Or maybe we see people being generous with their resources, with their time, with the giving benefit of the doubt. And it makes it more likely that we're going to be generous or behave ethically in some kind of way. So to hang around with people that are showing up and as best as they can at that moment, where nobody's perfect, and that's not what's being asked of us. What's being asked of us is to make this an orientation, direction of our life, something that we want to be a part of our life, and for us to show up as best we can. As best we can. So not only are they demonstrating to us some ways of behavior, but there's also a way in which we can find encouragement. There is no way I could have sat still for 45 minutes in the beginning. No way. 30 minutes. No way. I couldn't do it. But I would come and there would be people that would be sitting still. I would be inspired by them, and I would sit on the floor as long as I could and then just mindfully adjust my posture, just recognizing, oh, okay, apparently some humans can do this. Maybe I'll be one of those humans someday. And I am. It just happened, right? It's not like I set out exactly, okay, I got to get a training program to be able to sit on the floor. It's just coming to meditation, it just happened. So maybe we can find encouragement. And also there's this way in which we can find some appreciative joy. This is one of the Brahma Viharas. Just celebrate people's, whatever there is to celebrate about. We can take joy when they are joyful. It's beautiful when people share good things that are happening in their life. Maybe they got a job that they wanted, or maybe they got some good news from the doctor, or maybe they're signing up and got into a retreat and they've been trying to get in for a long time and finally made it past the lottery and got in, or something like this. I remember a lot of people, there was a time when I did a lot of retreat practice, and people were saying, oh, I have so much mudita, appreciative joy for you. And I couldn't really understand, what are they talking about? But now I know. It makes me happy when people are saying, oh, I'm going to go on retreat, and they feel happy. So, but there's also a way that being with other people, being with community, can also highlight maybe some of the rough edges or some of the unhelpful qualities we might have. Maybe we won't recognize envy so much until it shows up, and maybe somebody's saying, oh, I'm going on this retreat, I'm so happy, I can't wait to go. And then we kind of feel like, my life situation doesn't allow it. You know, there's could be this way. There can just be maybe some disappointment or envy when people are sharing something that's happening. Or maybe we find that we only want to hear people's views or that support exactly our own. And we discover that we get irritated when we hear something that we don't want to hear. We have this idea of how the world should be, or we just want to be praised all the time and affirmed in everything that we do. And maybe we hear something that's doesn't affirm things that we do. And is there a way that we can not be angry or push back, but maybe open up our views and say, that doesn't make sense to me right now, but maybe there's a time it might be. Instead of just saying, let's be completely dismissive. We don't have to adopt everything. You're welcome to take what's helpful and to leave behind the rest. But is there a way that the leaving behind is this sense of, right now that just doesn't resonate with me. Right now that doesn't seem appropriate. And recognizing maybe for some other people or some other time, it might be appropriate and helpful. Maybe something else I'll talk about, the advantages of practicing in community. If we practice only on our own, and it's easy to do. How many Dharma books are there now? There didn't used to be so many, but there's so many. How many apps are there? How many thousands of Dharma talks are there getting recorded right there on this little machine over here? Probably over 10,000 there. So even on our website, audiodharma.org, maybe, is there 10,000? Yeah, maybe. Lots of Dharma talks, right? So you could just be sitting at home listening to Dharma talks all the time. Nothing wrong with being at home listening to Dharma talks. I do it myself. But there's a way in which if we never talk to anybody, there can be these perceptions of, I got it together, I got it all figured out, and I know exactly what to do, and I don't need anybody else. Or, I'm so terrible. I can't do anything. Nothing I do is right. Right? We can have either of these two extremes if we're not practicing with others, if we don't ever talk with others. So often when we talk with others, we start to kind of like our experiences start to be normalized and we see the struggles that other people have. And we realize, oh, right, this is a training. This is a practice. It's not that anybody has it perfectly right all the time. When we first started to do retreats online, when we shifted from doing residential retreats to online retreats, now we do hybrid retreats, many of you know. We started, and this still is the case, we started having practice discussions, group practice discussions. So people would be in a group of 5 to 7 people and with a teacher, and each individual would share a little bit about how their practice is going. These are very confidential. This isn't something where people talk about what they heard with anybody else. But I have heard so many people share like, wow, that was so helpful. Just to hear that other people experience the same thing I do. Or maybe something that the teacher said to somebody else ends up being actually more helpful than what the teacher said to them directly. There's this way in which just to be in community, sharing how our practice is going and hearing instructions or guidance or directions from a teacher can be really helpful and supportive. So I'm talking about community and how classically it started with the Buddha talking about refuge in the Sangha and the importance of sila and generosity. But here's also a quote from the Anguttara Nikaya where the Buddha says, I do not see a single thing that causes wholesome qualities to arise as much as good friendship. Kalyanamitta. I guess it would be technically, you know, Pali, kalyanamitta, friendship. Nothing that causes good, wholesome qualities to arise is good friends. Parents know this when they notice they don't want to keep their kids away from bad influences or something. Right? We are very permeable. What we are thinking and feeling kind of leaks out of us and our body gestures and our body language. And how other people behave affects us. We all know this. We spend a lot of time with people who do a lot of complaining, or then you leave and it's so much easier to just join in and complain and then leave and keep on complaining. Or if you spend a lot of time with people who are laughing and having a good time and appreciating one another, there's just this uplift that happens and you feel happy and maybe feel better about yourself, the mood about yourself and humanity in general changes. Of course. So, of course, the company we keep has a big impact on us. And if we see somebody, like visually see people behaving in a way that's wholesome and supportive, it inspires us and we're more apt to do it ourselves. We hear about this a lot on residential retreats at the, or even day-longs that are here at IMC. Like when you see somebody walking very mindfully, oh right, I'm supposed to be mindful walking, right? Just seeing somebody, it's a big support. So we shouldn't underestimate how important, you know, the people that we surround ourselves with and the community. And there's this story of the Buddha's attendant before Ananda. Many of you know Ananda was the Buddha's attendant, but this is before. And the Buddha's attendant was this person named Meghya. And Meghya was a relatively new meditator. And earlier in the day, during alms rounds, he had saw that there was this beautiful mango grove where he wanted to go meditate. So after alms, he asked the Buddha, said, you know, I was thinking I was going to go meditate for most of the day in this mango grove over there. And the Buddha said, well, no, wait. I'm paraphrasing. you're my attendant, and I need you to be here. And I don't know, he doesn't say explicitly why. And then the Meghya says, oh, come on. I really want to go meditate. And Buddha says, oh, just can you wait until maybe somebody else is here and can be the attendant. And Meghya asks a third time, and the Buddha says, okay. This is a theme that we see. If you ask a Buddha something three times, often they will do it. So just next time you see a Buddha, just a heads up about that. So Meghya goes to the mango grove and he sits down to meditate. Finally, right? He gets to go meditate. I love mangoes. And so for me, I'm just imagining like maybe it smells like mangoes there. I've never been in a mango grove, but I'm just imagining that it's delightful there. And he sits down to meditate and he discovers that his mind is filled with cruelty, aversion, and desire, that he's very unsettled and he's just has all these unwholesome thoughts, unhelpful thoughts, and he spends the whole day battling with them. And he goes back to the Buddha and says, you know, I went to meditate, but I spent the whole time filled with thoughts of cruelty, aversion, we could say ill will, and sensual desire, maybe lustful thoughts. And the Buddha says to him, Meghya, when liberation has not fully ripened, there are five things which are conducive to full ripening. One, good spiritual friends, companions, associates. So I appreciate he used three words, friends, companions, associates. I'm interpreting these three words as different levels of intimacy, like maybe just being in a room with other people. You don't know anybody, but maybe being in a room with others is helpful. But maybe friends are people that you talk about the Dharma with, or talk more about your practice with. And then maybe there's in between, some people that you know just a little bit. So the first, Buddha says, good spiritual friends, companions, associates. Good spiritual friends is this word kalyanamita again. Two, ethical behavior. Three, supportive conversations. And these are what you would have with these spiritual friends. Four, effort. And five, wisdom. And then the Buddha continues and he says, because when one has good spiritual friends, companions, and associates, it can be expected of them that they will have ethical behavior, that they will have supportive conversations, that they will have effort for practice, and that they will have wisdom. So the Buddha is saying this is at the foundation that helps with all these other practices that can be support coming towards awakening. Okay. So I'm talking about companions, Kalyanamitta. We often say this Kalyanamitta, good spiritual friend. Some of you know this word Kalyana can also be translated as beautiful, beautiful friend. It's not easy. It's not easy to make friends as adults. How do we do it? I wish I could tell you, oh, just do A, B, C, boom, you'll be done, finished. It's not like that. It requires maybe stretching our comfort zone. It takes patience. It takes deliberate effort. It takes having warmth, being warm-hearted, being friendly, smiling. It takes honesty, your sincerity, your authenticity. And it takes being a good listener. These are the things that require, you know, some, in order to establish relationships that can be a support for your spiritual practice. There's this way that maybe not trying to be too spiritual. There's a way that that can like be stiltifying or stiltifying. That can just you know, put a damper. It's not that we're not spiritual, but there's this way in which sometimes maybe you've met people that are trying to be spiritual and it just, it feels a little bit clunky or a little bit awkward or something. So just show up as you are. But here's how it can be a little beneficial for your life. Is to have a willingness to learn from and be supported by others. Sometimes this is hard. Can we be teachable? Not that friends are going to teach us as much as can we be willing to learn something like, huh, I hadn't thought of that. Let me think about that. Oh, that's a good idea. Wow, I never thought of it that way. You know, instead of this an opportunity for us to just expound on the teachings of what we've learned, well, so-and-so Dharma teacher said this and so-and-so book said that. It's not about that. It's about showing up, being willing to listen, being willing to learn. Can we be inspired by others? Maybe they're in a different place and part of their spiritual practice, and maybe we're inspired by them. Maybe they've had opportunities to practice that we haven't. Can we not be jealous, or can we not wish that things be different? Like, wow, it's fantastic. Opportunity to meet with this, to spend time with somebody who maybe has been practicing longer. Just this recognition that other people's lives unfold differently than our life. Of course they do. Of course they do. Your life is unfolding exactly as it should be unfolding because that's how it's unfolding. And can we receive feedback? Sometimes this feedback is indirect. People, we can kind of see them kind of like shut down when we start to get up on our soapbox. Well, you know, such and such a Dharma teacher said this or that, or dependent origination really has these 12 steps that starts with this one. And, you know, there's this way which, you know, it's not about that. It's not about that. So it's also about maybe can, as I said, maybe opening, maybe letting go of some of our views about things, or being willing to learn from somebody who maybe is different than us, has had a different life path, has had a different focus. Maybe there's a way in which their different focus has something to share with us or to show us that maybe we hadn't seen. So this idea of community, good spiritual friends as part of our practice, And I would say an integral and an important part. It has been so important for me, so important for me. So I'm going to close with a poem, which is by Rosemary Traumer. It's called After Peeling the Beets, and it's by Rosemary Traumer. I resist peeling beets, hate wearing their red tint on my hands. But today, the thought of sweet roasted beets was enough to make me overcome my reticence. Later, I noticed it is impossible to feel separate and alone when my hands wear the evidence of what they have touched. I find myself wishing everyone could see on my skin how life has been marked by you, how everywhere we touched, I wear the stain of love. This idea that we're touched by others. Rosemary, she's talking about her hands. It doesn't have to be hands. We're touched by others. We're influenced by others. Of course we are. After peeling the beets. I love this. So I'll close there and open it up to see if there's some comments or questions. Thank you.
Hello. You mentioned that there was going to be a course. Could you give us more information about that, please?
It's on the IMC website, I'm imagining. It's called The Equivalence of Ethics and Enlightenment. And it's, I haven't looked this year to see where it is on the IMC webpage. It's probably on under What's New. So when you first land on the page, I don't know, Jim, can you look and just see? I think there's like a tab on the browser there for the IMC webpage. If it's not, it's under special programs there on the, oh, so maybe I'll tell you, okay, what is it? It's, meets usually once a month and there's readings and writings that you can write and submit and, kind of the beauty is you get no feedback on your writing. It's so great. Just send it in. A number of people in this room have taken some of these courses. And it's talks, guided meditation, and small groups. And so people really get to know one another. It happens both in person and online. So, and I think you can do like a combination of in person and online or do it exclusively online. And I think it's freely offered. So I can recommend
it. And also you mentioned about retreats. How would we find out about that and sign up for that?
So we have day-longs here at IMC at least once a month. And also on the InsightMeditationCenter.org website, in the upper right, you'll see Insight Retreat Center. We have a residential retreat center as well as this meditation center. Just click on that and you'll see the schedule.
Okay, thank you.
Did you want the information?
Is it different than what I said? Is it largely different than what I said? Is it on the homepage?
Yeah, it's Fridays 8:30 to 3:30.
There we go. Thank you. And you know what, Jim? Just because I'm talking about community, can you hand that microphone to Joe right here? And Joe can say his name, maybe where he lives, and then just pass the microphone. Everybody just say your name.
I'm Joe.
And you can maybe can say where you live if you want to. If you want to, you could say where you live, or no, you don't have to.
Joe from Mountain View.
Matt from Menlo Park.
Carrie from Redwood City.
I'm Kira from the Bay.
Janet, Menlo Park.
I'm Andre from Mountain View.
I'm Billie Jean from San Carlos.
Up here, Lena, that's right up here.
I'm Lena from Redwood City.
And then...
Yeah. I'm Kelsey from Redwood City.
I'm Grace from San Jose.
Kenneth, Menlo Park.
I'm Jenny from Menlo Park.
Jared from Foster City.
I'm Stacy from Mountain View.
I'm Dan from San Francisco.
Myla from San Carlos.
Denise from Palo Alto.
I'm Peggy from Redwood City.
I'm Brian from Redwood City.
Phil from Redwood City.
Andrew from Mountain View.
Stan, Palo Alto.
Is that it? Is that all of us? Fantastic. I don't know, my heart is bursting. That was great. We should do this every day. I really love that. Nice to meet you all. Nice to meet you all. Some of you I know your names, and many of you I don't. So really great. And does anybody have something they'd like to say before we end the evening? Okay. Thank you, and I wish you a wonderful rest of the evening and safe drive home. Thank you. If you'd like, you're welcome to come up here and talk to me.